Yesterday we were out at the leadership out at Monk's Yard, enjoying the hospitality there. If you haven't been to Monk's Yard, I encourage you to go. It's a great place, and the food's good, and the welcome and all the rest of it. But when we were there at lunchtime, after lunch, after enjoying these excellent paninis, we walked down the road at the side of the farm. And those of you who lived in Chard for any length of time will know that's the old road to Taunton. That's the road that used to go through Ashill. And as we walked along it, we were commenting on the state of the road. And we were finding it difficult to believe that this used to be the main road to Taunton, because the surface is all breaking up. But more than that, the weeds and the stuff on the side of the road has just started to encroach. And now it only looks like what's the sort of width of a single track road. Once upon a time, it was the main road to Taunton, and we all used to drive down it. It's getting lost. As the years go by, it will get slowly, unless Andrew and the others keep driving down it, it will eventually just get overtaken by all that stuff. And that reminded me of the subject that we're going to talk about today. And over the next four weeks in total. Holiness. It's a sort of forgotten subject. It's a thing that we don't find, perhaps doesn't immediately come to mind. Once upon a time, holiness would have been a major subject. Many revival movements had holiness as a core teaching and a core outworking, that God calls us to be holy people. And yet now it's getting a bit lost. Well, we want to try and, in a sense, over the next few weeks, recover not just the teaching, but to recover the meaning and the application of what it means to be holy people. What do we mean by holiness? Okay, right, here's your opportunity. Shut your eyes. Don't keep them shut, but shut them now. I just want you to let me know what pictures, what thoughts come to your mind as you think of being holy. Okay, open your eyes, you're not allowed to keep them closed, and if I see them closed later on, I'll be disappointed. Okay, give me some images that other people might think, not you of course, but other people might think of in terms of holiness or being holy. What pictures, thoughts come to mind? Who's going to be the brave first person?
Pure water.
I won't pick on anybody, I promise today.
Pure water.
Pure water, okay, that's an interesting one, yeah? Jesus Christ, okay. Stained glass windows, yeah. I thought somebody might go for something like that, yeah.
Angels,
yeah.
Priests.
Priests. Yeah, okay. Anything? Sorry?
Loving.
Loving, right, okay. That's an interesting one. We'll certainly be picking up on that in terms of in a few minutes.
Clean.
Sorry?
Clean.
Clean, okay. Nice white. Okay. I think if we were to go outside into the street and ask what images came up for holiness, they would be quite different. They would include some of those, no doubt. But I think generally they would be thinking of different things. They'd be thinking of things like monks, right, who separate themselves off. They'd certainly be thinking of church buildings. They'd be thinking of religious behavior. They'd be thinking of the commandments, don't do this, and things like that. And I bet generally the image of holiness is not a positive one. And even for us, if we're honest as Christians, I know you're all, no one dared shout out any images that would sort of be slightly near the mark. But for us as Christians, it's not something that, if we're honest, exactly grips and warms our hearts. Does it? Images perhaps tend to be more negative than positive. I don't think too many people out in the street, I wouldn't say in the church, would have images of love and joy and peace and cleanliness to do with holiness. They'd be thinking perhaps some other things. And partly that's because our image of holiness depends on what our image of God is like, doesn't it? Because we know God is holy, and therefore the way we see holiness will be partly how we see God. And how do we see God? Is it like the little schoolboy who was asked, what's God like? And he said, he's the sort of person who's always snooping around. And when he finds anybody that's enjoying themselves, he immediately tries to put a stop to it. And the truth is that sometimes nearer the how even we as Christians might think of God, not just people out there. That God, in a sense, is more concerned about putting us down, putting us in our place, pointing out our weaknesses, telling us the things that we can't do, and stopping us doing the things that perhaps we'd like to do, that we enjoy doing. What is holiness? Well, we're going to look at, I would encourage you to, in your life groups, you've got the first study in this week's news sheet. We're going to be looking at what holiness is like, and we're going to be looking at that, of course, based on the Sermon on the Mount, and I'd encourage you to be part of those groups and to enter into those discussions and those times of seeking and discovering. Holiness. Now, the Pharisees were a holy people, right? Many people would have described the Pharisees as holy. They were very religious. They were very scrupulous in the way that they followed and carried out their religion. And, of course, we know that the word holy means to set apart, that things are set apart especially for God. They're taken, they're not left out here for evil, but they're made holy and they're dedicated to God. Special purposes. And so in the Old Testament, things were holy. Things in the temple, the things that they served with were holy. The Sabbath was a holy day. It was a special day. A day when you didn't do certain things and you did do certain other things. So I was never allowed to play football on Sundays. Wasn't that terrible? Well, I don't know if it was in a sense, because my parents were trying to teach us as children, and my sister also played football, teach us as children that Sunday was a different sort of day, a day that should be special to God. And maybe the danger is you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But that's a separate issue. Sabbath was a holy day. And people like priests were holy and set apart for his services. And so the Pharisees had all these rules about what you should do, what holiness was like, and the things that you shouldn't do. I'm sure there were lots and lots of those, as well as some of the things that you should do. And strangely enough, of course, it was the Pharisees that Jesus had most of his difficulties with. You see, they couldn't understand why Jesus wasn't more religious. And Jesus couldn't stand their religion. Because as we know, and it was referred to just the other day, they were only interested in the outward. I think actually it was just the other week that we quoted from Matthew 15, when Jesus, having got so frustrated with them, said, "These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are but rules taught by men." They worship me. They think they're worshiping me by doing all this stuff. But it's in vain. It's absolutely waste of time. It's useless. Because they're only doing the outside stuff. Their hearts are far from me. There is no inner devotion and affection. It's just a list of do's and don'ts. And that's perhaps how we can think of in terms of holiness. And that perhaps is a dangerous default for all of us. Because in some ways it's easier to think about the things that we should and shouldn't do. And think that somehow by doing those things we're earning God's favor. We're getting ourselves closer to God. Well, we're not. Not if they're not done from our hearts. And holiness, if anything else, is something that involves our hearts. Not this little thing that thankfully is still pumping around inside of me, but our very beings, who we are as people, our thoughts, that focus of our passions and our feelings, our conscience, who you are. Holiness involves that and has to come from that. As the Puritans used to say, the heart of holiness is holiness in the heart. The heart of holiness is holiness in the heart, in the center of your being, becoming more God-centered, more focused on him. And holiness, as we've already been reminded several times this morning, holiness should be the grateful response to what God in Christ has done for us. That's why we should want to be holy. not out of a sense of duty, not because we want to impress, not that somehow because we think by being better, nicer people we're earning God's favor, not so that we think we're getting our way to heaven by doing certain things like Jehovah's Witnesses do. And I don't say that glibly, because I know there's many sincere people. But that's not it. Holiness is about the heart. And you might say, well, does it matter? Doesn't it matter really? Doesn't it matter if we just do the right things? Isn't that okay? You know, if we do live good lives, isn't that good? Isn't that good enough? Is it? In a few weeks' time, my wife will be surprised. Well, I hope she'll be surprised, because I've remembered that in a few weeks' time, it is 37 years since we went for our first date. She was only 6 at the time. I was, of course, a lot older, but yes. And I have written in my diary, I mean, is she back in now? Oh dear, right, okay, I was going to say. I was hoping she was still out, because if I forget this, it will be terrible now having said it. But in a few weeks' time then, on that day, I should turn up with a great big bunch of flowers, not as big as the ones you bought for Jenny when she left Monk's Yard. That's really caused me a few problems, by the way, that has. But anyway, I'll turn up with a bunch of flowers for my wife, and I'll say, Kim, 37 years since we went out, here you are. And she'll be absolutely delighted, because it doesn't happen very often, and she'll give me a great big hug, and she'll say, that's absolutely wonderful, wonderful. And I say, it's only my duty. I'm only doing it because I have to do it. Do you think she'd be impressed? She may take the flowers because she doesn't get them very often, but I don't think she'd be very impressed. You see, there's a vast difference, isn't there, between doing something because it's a duty or doing something because you really want to and you know it's the right thing to do and you love the person that you're doing it for. And that's what we've been, in a sense, touching on this morning. Do you love me? You see, if we just come to church, at times we have to follow through duties. I know that, and I do. But if that's all it ever is, if that's all it ever is, what a small, shriveled little thing it is. We're missing the real heart and the point of it all, that these things should be done out of love itself. The things that I do and the things that I say, the things that I don't do and the things that I don't say should be because I love him, because he loves me and gave himself for me. And we're going to be looking, there isn't time this morning, but over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at what it means to be holy and the marks of holiness. And I haven't got time to do that this morning, but just from those verses that we read, we see this in evidence in those people that Peter was writing to in 1 Peter. And if you want to turn to 1 Peter chapter 1, where Mary read to us early, you see it. He talks first about the things that God has done for them. And then he says in verse 8, though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your souls. You haven't seen him, and none of us have, but you love him. You haven't seen him, but you trust him. And because of that, you have what? Great joy. Great joy. And why does that surprise us? It shouldn't. Because loving him and trusting him puts us in the relationship with him that he wants, that he intended from the very beginning. A relationship in which we enjoy him. Not endure, but enjoy him. So though we haven't seen him, this is possible. This is possible for these people. They hadn't seen Jesus any more than we've seen him. And yet he was a reality in their lives. And they loved him and trusted him. And he goes on to talk about, therefore, the things that should mean in the way that they live for him. It's not a duty. It's out of love for him. And that is We can see that demonstrated in the life of Peter himself. If you turn back to Luke chapter 5, very quickly, I won't even read the story because most of us know it very well, right? Peter and the others are fishermen, and Jesus is teaching the people. And he's standing by the waterside, and he's teaching them truths about God. And there's so many people, probably he has to get back into Peter's boat, doesn't he, so that he can get a few yards away from the people. He's probably getting pushed back into the water anyway. And so he carries on teaching. And at the end of that, he says to Peter, he says, do this and you'll catch some fish. And Peter says, no, we won't. We fished all night. We haven't caught a sausage. Not that I've ever caught a sausage, actually, thinking about it. But I haven't caught anything. But anyway, because you say so, Jesus will do it. And of course, they throw over the nets and they feel this pull and all the wriggling of the fish inside the nets and the sheer weight, and they realize that they've caught a great catch. And verse 8, if I can quickly turn to it, yes, says, when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they'd taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. He fell on his knees and said, go away from me, Lord. Go away from me. Because I'm a sinful man. And how do we, in a sense, the thought today was thinking about how do we motivate? How is holiness, how do we encourage, motivate one another? How does God motivate us towards a life of holiness? And in part, it's reflected in this experience here of Peter. Because Peter, we don't know how it happened. Obviously, he'd been listening to Jesus' teaching before. He may have seen some of the miracles that he'd done. He'd heard what John the Baptist said about him. But in a sense, for Peter, it all came together. Otherwise, I won't be able to say anything. It all came together when he felt those fish. Suddenly, for him, at that moment in time, he recognized that the man in front of him just was not a great teacher. He wasn't just a nice guy. He wasn't just some sort of rabbi. He wasn't even just some sort of miracle worker. He recognized that this person standing in front of him, Jesus Christ, was indeed that he was the Christ. He was the perfect man. I don't know how his eyes and heart were opened at that point in time, but they were. And he stood before him and he realized who God was. And if we want to be holy, then the first aspect to that is that we need to see God who he is, as he is. Not as the devil tells us, as some killjoy who stops us doing the things. You can't eat any of that fruit. Didn't God say you couldn't eat any of the fruit from any of the tree in the garden? No. He said they could eat from any tree but one. And the devil will tell us that God is some miserable killjoy who wants to spoil our lives. And God just wants us to enjoy our lives. God wants, if we as earthly fathers and mothers want good for our children, how much more does God want good for us? He wants us to enjoy. And we need to start, ask God for that revelation, and we need to go on. This isn't just people who haven't yet had their first one. Those of us who are believers need to go on asking God to reveal himself through it to us, through the Bible, through what his Spirit speaks into our lives, that we might see the person that he is, but not with these eyes, but from our hearts. And Peter recognized who God was in some remarkable, miraculous way. And then he saw who he was. You see, I bet Peter wasn't a bad chap. Good family man. Honest worker. Did his best. I don't know that. I'm just guessing. But, well, some of those things. But I guess he wasn't a bad chap. And yet, in the sight of this man standing in front of him, he realized that he was sinful. He was full of sin. He wasn't holy. He was completely unworthy. And he falls down on his knees before Jesus. He says, go away. Leave me. Go. And we need to realize, as well as seeing God for who he is, we need to see ourselves for who we are. We are, every single one of us, totally, totally unworthy. We are sinful people. It isn't just the guys, people out there, is it? It isn't just the people that we read about in the paper who are in court for doing things they shouldn't have done. It's us. It's me. It's you. We are sinful people. You know, the wonderful thing, though, is that as Peter said, "Go away from me," I picture him on the floor on his knees looking down. I don't know if he was. His hand out saying, "Go away from me." You know, the beautiful thing was that I think Jesus might have taken hold of that hand, reached down and grabbed it and said, "No, come, follow me. Come. I know all about you, Peter. I know exactly. I know exactly where you've been. I know the things you've done. I know the things that you think. But come, follow me." And we need to hear that call on our lives. That through what he has done for us, we can come. Unworthy though we are, every single one of us, we can come to him. And we can follow him. And Peter gets up and follows Jesus for a new purpose in his life. It was a journey for Peter, not just the walking around with Jesus. They must have covered a few miles over those 3 years as they traipsed all around Galilee and Judea and to Samaria and whatever else. But there was another journey going on, wasn't there? A journey as he walked with Jesus and Jesus walked with him. It must have been fantastic at times, as they saw the things that Jesus did, but it was also at times really difficult and really hard, and Peter messed up. You know, and at the end of his term of 3 years with Jesus, we know that Jesus messed up big, not Jesus, Peter messed up big time. Messed up big time. We know he denied Jesus 3 times, just at the time that, in a sense, from a human perspective, that Jesus needed him most. He was nowhere. Have you ever denied him as a believer? We all have, haven't we? And yet we know there's that wonderful time when Jesus met with Peter after the resurrection. Another fishing trip, another huge catch of fish. This time a breakfast on the beach. And Jesus said to Peter, "Do you truly love me? Do you truly love me?" And Peter said, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." "Then feed my lambs." "Peter, do you truly love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." "Feed my sheep." "Peter, do you love me?" And it grieved Peter. Peter was upset. Whether it reminded him of the 3 times that he'd denied Christ, I don't know. But here was Jesus asking, "Do you love me?" And that's what it comes back to. And as we start to look at holiness and where it means, that is the question that we must answer. It isn't about the outward things that we're going to talk about in later weeks. They are important, and we need to make those effective and real in our lives. But the starting point is, do I love him? Do I love him? You know, at times I feel I don't. At all. Is that you? But I also know there's also there that desire to love him. And I know he hears and knows that. So he asks you the question, and me, do you love me? And if you can say, "Lord, I want to, I want to," then he'll hear. And by his grace, it will happen. It will become a reality. And one day, as we've sung already, we will spend eternity with him, praising him, loving him, living with him.